I'm Kathy Bosch. I work as a family and life educator for a counseling agency in Kitchener, Ontario. Creative conflict resolution works the same whether it's here or whether it's in Canada. And our topic for this morning is creative conflict resolution, and I think it must have been a creative decision you had to make as to whether you want to stay outside in this lovely day or come inside into a room and sit and listen. I'm glad you chose to come here. If we want to look at creative conflict, we need to look at some of the roots of what creates conflict. And I've heard a number of people define conflict as an issue that's gone, or a problem that's gone, two or three steps beyond where it should have stopped. We might also define issue as anything that concerns one or more people and necessitates a decision that affects everyday life. Something that needs to be done and often isn't done. It may affect your own personal growth, or it may affect the development of the relationship. So as we think of that as our basic, what might produce that conflict that we want to resolve, what are some of the things that you think other people experience as conflicts? The issues that grow into conflicts. They start out as little issues and they just mushroom. Kinds of things that we have to deal with generally. Other people, you may not have to, but other people. I know a friend who. For kids, it may be you're deciding what form of discipline to use, or you decide what is a bedtime, or when teens, when they get into their teens, there's a lot of conflict as to what are some of their rights, rules, and privileges. We don't want to talk too much about responsibility at that time, but more or less about privileges. What are some other issues, problems, conflicts that come up in most families that we need to find some way to resolve with next door neighbors?
Well, in a marriage, there's money problems.
Okay, how do we spend our money? Do we keep a budget? Who handles what? Who takes care of what? Who's responsible? Okay, money issues. What are some others? Issues of how we use our time. We talk about we just don't have enough time. How many of you were in the forum last evening with the youth group? And they were saying, one of the questions was asked, what are your parents doing to help prevent war from happening? And a number of the kids, the teens said, well, my parents are so busy, they don't have a lot of time. And I want to think back to, I grew up on a farm in southern Minnesota. And I remember as I was little that all the farm work was done with horses. And we had one of the most ancient tractors that, you know, the horses were faster. And corn was picked by hand. Cows were milked by hand. And that took a lot of time, but I think perhaps we had a lot more time then than we do now, because we find things to fill in little spaces wherever something else doesn't fill in. And that may indeed be the conflict of how do we really plan our time? We make choices. Consciously or unconsciously, the time is chosen. That we decide to do here or there. We may decide to live an hour and a half away from our work for some reason, because we've changed jobs, or because we like to live out in the country, or it's a prestigious area, or it's cheaper, or but then you add in the cost of transportation, and maybe it really isn't. But we make some choices sometimes without all the information that we need to know. But okay, conflicts, issues, problems, whatever word we want to use, they're part of life. They're an ordinary, integral part of life. They're to be expected. And I would look with some real question on someone who says, we never have any problems. But that's almost unrealistic, or you're that one or two people in the whole world that manages to get them all resolved before they become large. And great, tell us your secret. Sometimes we're really afraid of them though, and we just feel that I don't have the right to deal with something like this. I don't have the right to disagree or to feel that I have a need that needs to be satisfied. Last week I did a session on abuse, physical, sexual, and emotional. And I've been dealing with, I've been facilitating a support group for those who have been victims of abuse that may be around in the village. But what's very basic about all of this is that when it comes to issues of abuse, whatever the kind, someone says to herself, I don't have a right to say no or to get myself, all I deserve is that abuse. I can suffer through this, things will be better. There's a feeling that that's part of my life. Life is never going to be any better, or life would be a lot worse if I moved myself away from the abuse. So we sometimes feel I deserve all the difficulties that I have, and that there's no way out. Well, problems, issues are part of our life, but we can deal with it. We can find ways that can resolve, that can meet our needs in some way without causing a real problem for someone else as well. If we can deal with the issue as it is and try both sincerely to find a solution that can be a win-win situation and not, I'm going to win, you can lose, that's okay. And then you get resentment built up, you get defiance built up, you get resistance. You get a backlash at you. Some issues can be very quickly handled and it can be just talked over very quickly. Hey, what about this? Let's decide this now. Okay, what are the possibilities? Hey, I like that. Is that okay with you? Fine. And 3 minutes later, you're off doing something else. But others may take more time. They may also take some goodwill among the people involved, and they may also take some effort and maybe even some skills. The possibility that an issue is not going to go away just because you're uncomfortable with it. The issue will stay, and I know that there are people, I've known some people very close to me, who just would prefer not to have to deal with the issue, pretend it doesn't exist and it'll go away. And it really doesn't. What happens is that it mushrooms and it builds. And it may become that final straw that breaks the camel's back. And everything explodes. And you're not only dealing with one issue, you're dealing with multitudes of them. And it's just too much to sort out. And the feelings are too strong. And the goodwill has been lost because you've just been fed up to here, way over your head. And something's got to happen. Well, that really takes a monument of goodwill and a monumental effort to deal with that. Let's see if we can begin with it at a lower level, when it's smaller yet. And the issues may take longer to resolve when it arouses strong feelings. Whether it's the issue of trust, whether it's the issue of I've told you 1,000 times and I just can't take it any longer. It may take longer if you've got a number of choices and you don't know really which ones to choose. It may take longer because you have differing points of view. And particularly in partners, you haven't grown up in same families, generally. It's unusual if you have had the same kinds of parenting. But all families are different, so there's bound to be some different points of view, some different traditions, some different rituals, some different roles, some different rules that you've grown up with. And you try to meld them together, and they're different. That's okay. We can sometimes agree to disagree, and we may sometimes have to agree to negotiate a new way. They may be recurring ones that just haven't been dealt with, and it just becomes more irritating, and it and it picks at the sore a little bit more, and the sore becomes larger and larger, and it takes longer to heal. Maybe that you have different expectations. And then, it's okay to have different expectations if we can negotiate them, but what often happens is that we expect the other person to know what I expect. Do a lot of marriage preparation courses. And one of the things I really spend a good amount of time with is, first of all, on communication, how to deal with differences. And then to look at our expectations and to be clear with each other about them. And I'll ask the males to gather in one area with a big newsprint and the females to gather in another area with a big newsprint and felt tip pen and say, write down all the expectations you have for marriage. And it's interesting to find out the differences in those two lists. And then to have them get together and talk about it. Have them get together as couples in different areas of the world and talk about what did they feel when they heard other people talk of their expectations for that partnership. And what were some of my contributions to that? What were some of your contributions to that? What were some of the things that we weren't really quite sure about bringing up? And I have some lists that can stimulate their discussion. We need to know something about the other person's expectations in order to really understand what the issue is and how to deal with it. Sometimes issues may be about our own feelings, and that we may have a need to win. Maybe because we've lost in some other area, that there are just some things going on at work that you can't resolve, and you feel out of power there, no control, powerless. And you come home and you want to grab onto that power and be determined that you're going to be right. And just not give in, even though you know better. Anyone ever feel that? I think we can connect with that at times. And then you think afterwards, why in the world did I do that? The hour later, the next day, or whatever. What got over me? How was I so out of control? And we may need to get in touch with our own feelings and to recognize it and maybe not deal with it at the time that our feelings are so high, but wait until we cool off a little bit. Those outside pressures may need to be talked about. I'm really feeling such and such at work, rather than they're making me. No one can make you feel anything without your permission, basically. We may want to argue some fine points on that. We won't take the time right now. But basically, you can respond. You can choose how you're going to respond to someone else. You can certainly choose your actions. Actions are always choices. Well, let's look at the issues. There are three basic types of issues that can grow to become conflicts. One might be just basic topics. They're the easiest ones to deal with. They may include things, places, events, ideas, people. You may want to disagree with me on this, and sometimes money may be included in that, time, work. But they're a little bit, and sometimes if they may fit into one of the next categories as well. But it's any kind of thing that ties you to the world around you. And it is easier to deal with than the next two. So topics are the first ones. Things, places, it can sort of be kind of information sharing and deciding, mutual deciding. Personal is the next level that may be a little bit more difficult to deal with. They're the issues that concern you or your partner as an individual. It's not something together, it's personal. And we need to decide then who owns the problem. And if it's a problem that I'm having with my boss, I can't make my husband responsible for how I am or am not getting along with my boss. I have to take that as my own personal responsibility. I can talk and say, well, what are some possibilities? What are some ideas? What are some choices that I have to deal with this? And we may do some generation of ideas. I can't say, go and solve it for me. Some of these things we have to solve ourselves. Some of these personal issues, we also have to deal with the way you define yourself, the way you look at yourself. your own goals, your health, how you feel about yourself, your self-esteem, and the values you hold. And values are personal. By their very definition, values are personal. Values include something that you've decided upon from among alternatives, that you've chosen freely, that you're willing to talk about, that you're willing to act on, and you're willing to share with, and that you're willing to act on with repetition. So if you say you value peace, and you don't do anything about it outside of talking about it, then maybe it's really not a value yet. It's a belief, it's an idea, but it hasn't reached that stage of value that I'm acting on it. Value is something that you're willing to fight for, willing to do something about, and you're willing to talk about. When I do sexuality education courses with adolescents and parents, and I talk about values, and I'll meet with a group of the adolescents, and I'll say, what are some of the values you have? Or with the parents, they'll say this too. And they'll say, oh, I have values about it, but I don't talk about it. Then they're not really values. They're not values unless you're willing to share them and work on them, and to let other people know how you're working on them. That's the definition of values. So that's part of that personal category of issues. The relationship is the third, and perhaps the most difficult, because you've got some risk there. What if the other person is going to say, bye? And that's scary. What if I really have the most investment in this relationship, and if I ripple the waters a little bit too much, they'll say, well, if that's what you feel, I'm not great. I can get along without it, forget about it, and just turn around and walk away. And that's a risk. So the relationship includes areas of joint importance to both you and your friend, that other person with whom you have the relationship. It includes your impact on each other and how you experience each other, how you perceive what the other person's doing and how it relates to you. You may have to deal with how you make decisions or don't make them. Remember, not to decide is to decide. We've just let somebody else make the decision. We've decided to let somebody else make the decision. It may have to deal with issues about sex, about trust, about control, about communication, maybe even about affection, how we relate to each other. Not all issues are alike, and some are much tougher to deal with than others. Intimacy and risk increase proportionately as you move from topic to personal to that relationship level. And sad, it's really quite saddening that what most couples want to talk about is also what they fear most talking about. Those issues that concern the relationship as a pair. How do you talk beyond the pink tea stage, you know, is it a nice day outside? How have things gone at the office? And the person may say, terrible, horrible, and you say, isn't that nice? Because you haven't really heard him. Because relationship issues tend to be sensitive, they are frequently cloaked in the guise of topic issues. Do we have enough time about this, to do this? And rather than, how do you really feel about it? We move it from that serious, sensitive issue up to an easier issue of a topic. Things, places, events, ideas, people. We talk about other people. And as a result, maybe it never gets resolved. Straight Talk, which is based on the couple communication program by Miller, Wackman, Nunnally, and Saleem, has some very good things to say, both about communication, looking at, well, deal a little bit with awareness wheel. But I think this is an interesting little story, they say. When we think about issues and we think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to be married, happily, you know, live happily ever after. And they state, hardly anybody lives happily ever after. As Sleeping Beauty and Prince Charming rode off into the sunset, they were probably debating about where to spend the night. He wanted to head back to the castle. She wanted a romantic interlude at the little inn at the edge of the forest. Issues, you see, are unavoidable, but trivial or serious, we manage to manage them. Only when issues escalate into problems do we feel backed against the wall with no way out. And this happens when, one, an issue is never identified. Too afraid to really say, hey, we really haven't decided about, or we haven't talked about, or I've been bugged by, I really feel such and such about such and such. Never really identified. Two, an issue is recognized, identified, but ignored until it festers into a problem and it grows bigger. It's not just this little piece down here, it's this mammoth one up here that includes a variety of things. Or three, an issue is handled but never effectively settled because a solution is arbitrarily imposed rather than mutually worked out. That happens a lot when we deal with our adolescent kids or young adult kids. We decide what they're going to do, and they haven't bought into it. It may not be some, we don't understand the whole issue. It grows into a problem, and they're not happy with the solution. Most differences can be disguised at the issue level, regardless of the category involved. But at the problem level, when an impasse seems insurmountable, you'll hear something like, there's nothing to talk about here, or this is beyond the talking stage. These clues indicate that you've entered problem territory, probably unconsciously, because an issue can ripen into a problem very easily. And it's important to differentiate between an issue and a problem, because learning to spot the former helps prevent the latter. If we can understand the issue, we can prevent it from being the problem. Few issues will disappear independently. You can't ignore them, and it doesn't pay to store them. Well, healthy relationships are characterized by the manner in which you recognize and deal with issues. And we might want to tune it. One of the things they deal with a lot is the awareness wheel. And the awareness wheel is getting in touch with a variety of things about us. And the awareness wheel, we can make this into, can I get five places on two, three, four, five? Okay. The awareness wheel begins to deal, first of all, with sense. Your senses, I see, I hear, I touch, I taste, I smell. Our house is a no smoking house because of health and because of environmental pollution. When I'm in a place, my nose is very sensitive to smelling something burning. And I can tell that there's a match been lit or a cigarette that's been somewhere, you know, quite into the next room. Because I know what it's like to not have that smell around. So that's getting in touch with my senses. And as we're looking for becoming aware of what's going on, we may want to tune into, what am I seeing? I see somebody slumped in a chair, looking dejected. I hear someone who's trying to control that voice and who's not letting out those emotions that are underneath there, that are beginning to burn, you know, sound like they're ready to simmer, but they can't come out and say, I'm really feeling. So sometimes our senses, we get in touch with what's happening by our senses. I have a friend who was in a class that I taught at one time at Syracuse University, who's a contemporary of mine, who now does parenting and communication courses as well. And she says one of the courses she wants to teach sometime is she wants to label as hearing with our eyes, seeing with our ears, and learning what to do with the tongue God has given us. I think that makes a lot of sense. So we can tune into our senses. What are we getting through our senses about what the issue is? And then we have our interpretations. How do we interpret those senses? When I see you, I thinking that you don't want to talk to me. When I see you sit down and put your head down and not look at me, I sense you don't respect me. I feel you don't, I think I want to get away from feelings. I think that what you're really trying to do is avoid me. How do we interpret what we're seeing? Or the next part is tuning into feelings. Feelings, how do I feel? And I really feel put down. I feel neglected. I feel humiliated. I feel lost. So we may connect all of these, even start anywhere on this awareness wheel, and connect with the other. And then, because of those feelings, or because of what I sense, or because of how I interpret them, I have intentions. Intentions or wants. And we might put think underneath interpretation. If I see you, I see you turning away from me, I think you're trying to avoid me, and I really feel put down. I feel negated, and I want to get back at you. I want you to feel how I'm feeling now. And I then may act. Actions is that fifth part of the awareness wheel. I may act by going away and saying, see if I care. And just let, snub you. So we might get in touch with what's happening within ourselves. What do I think? And a lot of times our interpretations are how we read it. It may not be what the other person intends to send through that message. They may be saying, oh boy, if I got a blasted headache, or I just realized I forgot a very important thing that was supposed to have been done by 3:00 this afternoon, and I don't know how I can pick up the pieces. It may have nothing to do with you. But we've interpreted, we've sensed, we've seen something, we hear something, we interpret it in a way that takes it personally, and we have our feelings come out of those thoughts, and we act on our feelings, we choose how we're going to put those feelings into action, into behavior, and we act in a certain way that and the other person thinks, what's happening with her? I haven't even said anything, and she's responding to me as if I've called her a dirty name. See, we can have assumptions. What is it they say? That path to hell is paved with false assumptions. We assume certain things. And I also, this is one of my, remember, whenever we are tempted to use the word, I assume what you really mean is, without checking it out, or I assume this is really what you mean, that we can divide that word, and we tend to make, if you'll excuse the expression, we tend to make asses out of both you and me. Whenever we assume something without checking it out, do you really mean, am I getting the right message, or am I getting it? Just let me check this out. I want to check out if I'm understanding you correctly. Or I hear you saying, do you mean? Any of those can be the beginnings of sentences that you can use to check out if the message they intend to give is the one that you're receiving. And that may be one of our first steps to resolving conflicts, is to make sure that we're getting the message right, that we're reading, that we aren't reading something else into what's happening. There may be other clues too. That's a set of clues that we can come within that comes from within ourselves. Tuning into that kind of awareness. And sometimes, if there's really an issue that's bugging you, you may want to sit down, take out a piece of paper, draw a five-spoked wheel, and fill in. If it's an issue about, we haven't had much time together. Why are we always planning? We can make time for everything else, but not time for each other. So you may put that whole issue right here in the middle. And you might put time together. And that, what do I sense? you know, that's the seeing, that's the sense is not the sense of the feeling, and the feeling is what you touch. So under the sense portion of that wheel, it's what you see, hear, taste, smell, touch. And you're probably going to be tuning into those first two more so. Others may come into place. Well, what do I see? What are the actual sense data that's out there? Like, what would the reporter use in writing up that article for the paper? The reporter uses what he sees and hears, she sees and hears. An editorial uses interpretations and feelings. But the reporter for the news article will stick strictly in what is being heard and what's seen, strictly to the facts, without any interpretation. Whenever you see an accident written up, a car accident, you never see the reporter say, I really think so-and-so was in the wrong because he was in the wrong place and heading the wrong direction. And that's never said. That's editorializing. So you might, when you're wanting to deal with it, you should get in touch with what you're feeling about it. What are your interpretations? What are your feelings about it? What are your intentions or wants as a result of the other? And what have you done? We'll come back to that in another minute. You may also want to look at some other clues that may come. A kind of nagging awareness. Something's uncomfortable. You may not be able to grasp it easily, but you might want to think down and maybe start to use that. I'm uncomfortable about this. Why am I uncomfortable? What am I really feeling? And then get in touch with yourself. Know yourself. Sometimes these can be unexpected happenings without warning, that it comes up, the issue comes up very quickly. All of a sudden, it seems like this happens all the time whenever we get ready to go off on vacation, and you've got all these, you've finished up work the day before, and you've got all these things to do that night, and then three people drop in that you haven't seen for a year or so, and you don't want to send them off because they're just somebody you would love to spend time with them, but you also have this, you know, how are you going to deal with it? Let's talk while I do such and such is what we finally end up doing. You might have some clues about just a built-up pressure, unfinished business. It's the kind of thing that before you get to that last straw that is going to break that camel's back or explode the bag. You might be able to anticipate events likely to create conflict and demands. We finally decide after a number of years of always having someone drop in the day we really plan to get everything ready, began to plan to stop work, to take a holiday, to get ready for the holiday or vacation day so that we had, you know, an extra time. There might be some physical cues. That headache or that backache or that pain or a ringing or something that may have to do with that stress or the pressure buildup. And it may not really need a trip to the doctor. It may need getting in touch with yourself and what are some of the issues that I haven't dealt with that are just giving this extra pressure on me. And we can look at issues as either threats or possibilities. And which it is depends upon your set degree of confidence in yourself as well as your degree of confidence in that other person. Whether it's your child, whether it's your parent, whether it's your partner, whether it's a good friend, whether it's a coworker. How are you feeling about yourself and how are you feeling about them? And if you're apprehensive about the risk to that particular relationship, you may want to ask yourself three questions. One is, what's the best thing that could possibly happen from a confrontation or a discussion of this issue? What's the best thing? What do we most often tune into first? What's the worst thing? That's the second question to ask. But start out with, what's the best thing? Then ask, what's the worst thing that could happen as a result of this confrontation? But then don't forget the third question is, and that is, what can I do to prevent the worst from happening? Because you have choices. You always have some choices. So find out the answers for yourself on those three questions. And another thing to think about is when you tackle the issue, to be able to tackle it as to whether you tackle it with optimism or pessimism may depend upon your ratio of appreciation to criticism in any relationship. And maybe when you realize that, boy, there have been some real differences of opinion and we've been operating at loggerheads or we haven't resolved some of these things, to look back at what has been your communication with this person? Mostly criticism or an equal amount of criticism and appreciation, giving thanks, I appreciate, I like, it's great to have you work with me. You know, that kind of the warm fuzzy, the stroke that you give the other person. Whether it's with a child, you know, anywhere through that relationship, from dealing with issues with your child, your partner, your friend, or at work. Appreciation and acceptance lead to feelings, positive feelings, that help us then be able to examine the negative issues with assurance that the relationship will not crumble. So we have something solid to work on. So we may have to build up that foundation base sometimes and share appreciation. Sometimes that's what can be done by saying, you know, I realize I've been nagging a lot lately, and I want to get out of that. So I'd like to spend some time telling you what I do like. So you may set a time where you can just say, I appreciate you, and give 10 quick listings. Do some sentence completion. I like it when you. I appreciate. I should have shown my appreciation more when you did. Even think about the past. To share positives with each other. Too often, we're more quick to throw stones and slow to say thanks, or the I like, or I appreciate. And you might want to say, I haven't done this very much before, but I want to change. Write a note to yourself. Put it on the refrigerator. Put it on the bathroom mirror. Show thanks today. Give a warm fuzzy. That comfortable feeling. So the next time you're about to discuss an issue with someone close to you, look at your appreciation-criticism ratio. And do the number of dissatisfied comments outrank the number of satisfied comments, or the number of verbal strokes? Do you mistakenly believe that if you point out your partner's faults often enough, she or he will get the message to shape up? When somebody keeps criticizing you, what do you feel like doing? Shaping up? Not usually. Rarely, on some occasions, it might work. But there might be better ways of saying, I would like it. Can we negotiate how we're going to do such and such, rather than, why don't you ever? Why can't you ever? You never. It's you always. Remember the always, never, shoulds get us into a lot of problems and box us up. It would be nice if. Let's decide what to do, rather than the always and shoulds. If there's no balance between carping and caring, I like those two words put together, if you are hooked on a pattern of mainly negative disclosures, that may be why issues are never resolved. And we may have to start from there and figure out where do we go. One place might be, well, how big is the issue? And to make a distinction between major and minor issues. Some people say that whenever you feel that there's a conflict coming on, you ought to mentally give it a 1 to 10 rating, 1 being low, 10 being high. And if it ranks down that lower level, maybe just agree to disagree on it. Well, I guess that's your opinion. I can let you do that. If it gets up higher, then to be able to own your feelings about that and to begin to deal with the conflict resolution on that issue. Have you ever been around somebody who's constantly complaining about every little thing? I have a friend whose mother, that we know fairly well, talks about how she's an older senior citizen, and she talks about, oh, how she dislikes all these complaining senior citizens. They're complaining about this ache and pain and that ache and pain, and that they're never satisfied with this and never satisfied with that. And she says to them, knock it off. Don't want to have any negative stuff going on. Can't wait. We have to talk positive. I don't want to hear any more complaints about health or whatever, or about my kids not writing me often enough or calling often enough. And she says to them, I don't want to hear any more negatives. But then she sits down and just lists negative after negative after negative, and nothing's right, and no one does, and no one cares, and you ought to, when people turn 65, they ought to take you out to the pasture and shoot you. I mean, that's her feeling. And yet she hears other people being negative and tells them to knock it off, but can't recognize how often she's negative. And graciously listen to this friend and let her go on. But you want to say, oh, you're not all at all aware of how you fall into the trap of what you don't like others doing. So how do we get, we cannot possibly work out every wrinkle in our life. So we need to find the issues that we can deal with very quickly so that they don't build up. Decide that some issues are just going to be differences between us, and that it's okay if the other person likes peanut butter and mayonnaise and I can't stand the sight of it, but I don't have to eat it, so I can eat my peanut butter and banana or whatever, which might be just as disagreeable to the other person. But you may just decide to agree to disagree on some things. If you cannot agree to disagree, then how can we work through that issue together so that we can accept each other and not have the negative, uncomfortable feelings? How to get to attend to it? We might, before we proceed, we might think of setting some basics, looking at what the issue is, getting in touch with that awareness wheel. What are really some of my feelings and why? Check out some. And maybe you get to the interpretations and you share that interpretation. When I see you, I think you mean such and such an ideal. And the other person says, oh, no, not at all. That's not the case at all. What's really happening is, and all, the issue may be resolved. Just clarifying your misinterpretations, those assumptions. Huh, good. I'm glad we could get that cleared. Let's make sure that we keep doing that and not assume we know what the other one feels. If it's something that isn't resolved that easily, we might have to look at whose issue is it? Who owns the issue? Who owns the problem? Is it something that person is dealing with personally, and I'm taking it personally because I don't think they can handle it? They're too weak to handle it. They won't handle it the right way. I can do it better and quicker than they can, so I'll do it for them. And the message we give to them is, you're incapable, you're not lovable, I've got to rescue you. So what happens when we discover that maybe that issue really belongs to the other person? It's the issue that I have in dealing with a coworker, and I'm blowing off some steam to my husband. I may have some fantasies at some times to say, you rescue me, you take care of it, go say something to this person. Hopefully he is sensitive enough to say, I can't deal with it, but I can listen to you and help you hear yourself deal with it. That he can acknowledge my feelings about it. That I can be accepted even with some feelings on the issue. I can be accepted even if I do own a problem. I'm an okay person. Just because I own a problem, I'm not untouchable, or I don't want to deal with it because that problem may run off onto me. So to acknowledge your feelings, to acknowledge that it's okay, I can see how you're feeling about that. You're feeling such and such. What do you recognize? What are you hearing that other person say? We might need to check on who is to be included in the resolving of this issue. If I have a problem with my coworker, and I only go to my husband and talk to him about it and don't do anything about sharing it with my coworker, or worse, yes, go to the boss and tell the tale about the coworker without ever having interacted with a coworker on this issue. We're dealing in the wrong category. We need to deal first with the person with whom we share the problem and not talk to 10 other people before you ever get around to talking to that person. We may decide, when should we talk? Maybe this is not the time to talk about it. Maybe our feelings are still too high. And we can admit what our feelings are. I am really feeling furious and outraged and disheartened and put down when I see you do such and such. I can't handle that right now. I need to cool off and I want to talk about this. What's a good time? Any time after an hour from now, or whatever time I feel I need, or a half hour from now. You can schedule. You can schedule fights. Ever think about that? Fight does not have to be at the moment you recognize the issue or the problem. If you feel that you will not be in control of yourself or the issue, or that you'll do things that will make the issue worse, recognize the need to take time out. Or, I need some time to think more about this. I need some time to think more. Or it may just be that it's the wrong time. You wake up, realize something's happened, you're both rushing off to work, that's not the time. Or you're going off to a party, and the issue comes up, and you don't want to spoil your whole feelings about enjoying the party. That's not the time to raise the issue. Let's plan to renegotiate a time of when else you can deal with it. So you might negotiate that. When should we talk? You might negotiate where should we talk, that you don't do it in front of a group of people. I'm not going to start bawling you out. I shouldn't do that in the first place anyway. It's not helpful. I don't want to start raising an issue with you with all the other people around when it just has to deal with us. The others don't need to know. However, George Bach, who is the writer of this book on the inner enemy, and his earlier book, which is a very good one, I don't have it with me, it's called The Intimate Enemy, and the subtitle is How to Fight Fear in Love and Marriage. He sometimes says, on some issues, it may be helpful to have a third person around, because you don't want to be seen as the dirty guy, the dirty player, in front of another person. So you might fight more fairly in front of another person. It really takes a good choice of who that other person is going to be, that it's not going to be somebody who's going to enter in on one side or the other. But there can be a mediator, someone who doesn't have a part in this whole scene. That it does not have to be it should not be somebody who is going to take sides. But you might also decide how long is this going to take, and if you are tempted to say, hey, do you have a minute? I want to discuss something with you. And you know it's not, very few things can be resolved in a minute. Be more realistic about it. I have an issue I think we need to discuss, and it may take at least 15 minutes. Is this a good time? Or can we find another time? Or can we do 15 minutes worth now, and if we don't get it finished, that we can renegotiate another time to complete it. That we can negotiate a time to stop. Or yes, the World Series is coming on in 15 minutes, and you don't want to miss that first toss of the ball. So what can we get? Let's see what we can get done in 15 minutes, how far we can go through, and then decide on when we finish it. It may have to be tomorrow. You may even want to decide how will we talk about it. To set up some ground rules. Let's talk about how each of us feel, and I'll give you some more helps for that in a minute. To own your own feelings instead of using you statements. You make me, you always, you never, you shouldn't be doing, to say, I really don't like it when, to describe the situation. To describe your feelings, I really feel such and such when you do such and such. To maybe even describe the effect on you. When you do such and such, I feel, because I end up having to do 10 times more work, or I end up not being able to do what I need to get done because I have to finish your work first. What's the actual effect on me in time, energy, money, extra effort, whatever those issues are? What's the actual concrete effect on me? If you cannot find that third part, the actual effect on me, then it's quite often a collision of values. And you can't, a value doesn't have a direct effect on me. I value neatness may not have an effect on the other person who doesn't value neatness. So they may not, if their lack of neatness, however, means that I have to pick up after them and it takes me extra time, then it becomes a problem as well as a values collision. And it can be both. We might also discuss and decide in the whole preparation for setting up our conflict resolution, how much energy is available. If you really had a hard day, if you really exhausted all the energy that you've got available, that may not be the time to try to resolve a large issue. You may indicate some feelings that you have about it, and they indicate a wish to work on it and set up another time and say, I know it ought to be resolved now, but I don't have the energy to really put into it. Or I'm going to end up with some additional feelings that are going to cloud the issue even more. So you might renegotiate a time to work on it. Okay, how do we go about? What are some of the creative processes that we might use in resolving the issue? There's a couple of different forms that we can take. We may go through this whole awareness wheel and to say, you fill out a wheel on your own, and I'll fill out one on my own, how I sense, interpret, feel, intend, and act on this particular issue, and then let's just talk about it. And we'll each only talk about from what we feel. I can't put down, you shouldn't feel that way, but I can say, I understand that you're feeling such and such. I did not intend that to be, I feel, or I meant to. I wanted to act on it, I intend to act in a certain way. So we may go around through that and can come out with a lot of basic information about what's happening that can let us have a good foundation on which to build. We might create an information base, and that information base may deal, each of us dealing specifically, with the past current actions. When I see you, and that gets back to our language, when I hear you, I have done, and look at what my actions have been, how have I participated in this particular conflict. So that we're still using that awareness base, but we look at past actions, what I have done, and what I have seen you do. And we may go into our sense, I see, I hear, how I interpreted it, what my feelings were about it. And we may then lay out, and then we may look at intentions in a different way. What do I intend to do? What do I intend to do? For me, what are my intentions? What are some of my intentions for you? What would I like you to do? What are my intentions for us? So it may have three parts, that intention section. It may have a part that I fill in for me, it may have a part that I fill in for you, it may have a part that I fill in for us. What are my intentions? What am I willing to do? What do I really want to happen? And then we might go into that action part and say, what am I willing to do? These are our intentions. We may not always be willing to act on our intentions. So I may go to that next step then and say, what am I willing to do? To commit myself, what am I willing to commit myself to? That's one means of focusing on that. Another one is, to look at that very basic of laying out the ground rules, the groundwork. What is the real issue at hand? Define and put a label on the issue. Constant lateness, for instance. I get irritated when we always get started for something late. My feelings, how do I feel about that? I like to get to places on time. I like to see the movie from the very beginning. I have a need to get all my money's worth when I pay $4 to see a movie that I see it all. I mean, those may be some of my needs, my feelings. That's laying out. What's the real issue? The second part may be, let's look at all the possibilities. Brainstorm some issues. Brainstorm some alternatives. Well, we camp out there from the afternoon on, or the day, and you can go from the ridiculous to the sublime. You may have some fun in generating some ideas. That's okay. It can relieve the tension and the frustration that might be part of that problem, the conflict. So, just brainstorm all the possibilities, all the options that might be available to you. Don't evaluate any. Don't say, I couldn't do that. Oh yeah, that's a good one. Let's stop right there. Because there may be others. Just say, okay, we're going to just get out the ideas now and not evaluate any of them. That'll be the next step. Because when you start evaluating, then it distracts your thinking. And you may lose a good thought process, procedure. Get out all the ideas. If you get stopped, you just don't have any, say, let's think about this for half an hour, come back and finish. Give yourself some time. Reschedule again. Okay, when you get through, and write them down. If it's a big issue, write them down. If it's a little issue, you might just throw out a couple of things, decide on them, go decide who's going to do it, and go ahead with it, and be done in 5 minutes or less. Big issue may take more time. List all the possibilities. Write them out. If you're doing this with a child, have them write out the possibilities so that they can see that you're willing to work on it together so that you both win. This is not a win-lose situation, this is a win-win. Step three, then, is to look over the list of alternatives and evaluate them. If we did this, what might happen? What would be the consequences? There might be some that are just non-negotiable with you. I would feel very uncomfortable with that. I could not do that. Somebody might say, if I did that, they'd laugh at me at work. I couldn't do that. Cross it out. Respect their feelings. There's bound to be some that are left that you can agree on. If you end up crossing them all out, you may decide, well, let's look back at these and what might be okay. What could we rearrange or revise that would make it okay? Or, if there's none, let's think about it again and go come back, renegotiate a time to come up with some more ideas. You'll generally end up with several that are possibilities. You may end up deciding to do parts of each, to just do one, or to do all of them. That's step four. Step four is to decide, okay, which of these possibilities will we do? Step five is to decide who is going to do what, when, where, and how. That is the important part. Often we stop at step four, and we never put it into action. We never decide who is going to be responsible for what. And that's very important. Negotiate, I'll do this, and the other person, I'll do this, and we'll do it such and such a way by when. We'll try to have it done by such and such a time. And then set up a follow-up time. Let's see how it's going to work for a week. Decide on how long you're going to put it into action. A day, let's try it for the rest of today. Let's try it for this week, a month. You decide on the time. And then at the end of that time, come back and say, how is it working? What's going on? Should we continue with this? Do we need to revise? Has the problem solved itself? And congratulate each other for what is working, not put down for what isn't working. Well, we've really been able to manage this and this and this. What else do we still need to work on? How else can we do it? We might problem solve that remainder. Those are several options. Let me throw it open to you and see what questions you have or what other ideas you may have to contribute to the whole problem-solving process. Yes?
The other person has to be willing to want to do this, right? Not think it's corny or out of line or...
Yeah, to say, if we can, how do we initiate that problem-solving process to say, I've really been uncomfortable with this, I'm sure you have felt such and such, And that's not been very, to recognize what their feelings might be and say, let's work on this so that we both win. And try to keep working at that, that it's not a win-lose situation, but a win-win. That we can agree on something that will work for both of us. And if you can't get there, but try hard. Don't, maybe not even give up the, if they say, no, I'm not willing. It may be too uncomfortable. It may be difficult for them to really get in touch with that they're not in control. You may have to try it again another way, another time. And if after several tries, try as often as you can, you may just have to decide to agree to disagree. And that may also be need to be a verbal thing. I recognize that we're not going to be able to resolve this. I was hoping that we could come to some negotiation. We need two people to negotiate, and I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree. And work on that. Find some way of accepting that. Forgiveness comes into this too. That whatever has happened in the past, we don't keep bringing up again and again and again and again. We need to forgive the other person as well as ourselves. And that if we want to, that we receive God's gift of forgiveness freely and graciously, we need to share that gift with others and accept it from others. Other questions, comments? Yes.
The college program, I do a lot of conflict kind of things with college students, and we've talked about the students needing to both want to do it. I think that's really key. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when I'm working with conflict resolution with somebody else, that's a little easier, but when there's, I'm a third party with two other people who are having a conflict, they both have to want to work at it, or it's really a really difficult process.
And we may aid that willingness to work on it by showing our appreciation for the other person, listening and understanding and accepting where they are. You know, accepting and agreeing are two different things. We can accept that person even though we may not agree with what they're doing. To be able to separate the behavior from the personhood of the other person. I appreciate you. I cannot take that the way you're dealing with such and such, the way you deal with me and such, and I wonder if I would like to have us work on this to find a new way that we can both accept being comfortable about it. And it may need a lot of coming to terms with who I am, that I am a child of God that's acceptable. God doesn't make junk. And often we have difficulty in accepting a commitment to work on conflict resolution because we feel too weak. And maybe this is one place that we show some power. And that if I lose that power, I lose me. And help them feel they're still okay, even if they have to share that power.